Hi everyone, and welcome back to Into the Void. I'm your host Ant, and you join me today for episode number 33 of my weekly audio diary, in which I share my observations about the world and a lot of the strange happenings that we're all witnessing right now, and also just share some hopefully insightful aspects of my own journey as things continue to speed up and the world seems to be becoming crazier and crazier as things fall apart at greater and greater speed. So thank you all for tuning in once again. It's good to be back. It's been a while since I've done Into the Void, so it's nice to get back to my audio diary once again. And I hope you are all doing well and managing to thrive during these very strange times. Anyway, as always, today I'm going to begin, I want to pick up some aspects of the news that's been happening in my absence, but not really with specifics of the news story, but more kind of my observations of how it ties into what I talk about quite a lot, which is sort of the black pill delusion or the truth or trap. First of all, of course, here in the UK anyway, we've had this huge story of where is Kate? Where is Kate Middleton, Princess of Cornwall, I think she's officially known as, anyway. And yeah, it's been obsessing the news and the alternative media alike, because she hasn't been seen in public since, I think it was just after Christmas, but before the New Year, so that'll be last year now. And you've probably seen online these images that were put out by the royal household. There's one particular image that it was originally, it was claimed that Kate herself had edited it, had done a bad Photoshop, and then many of the main official news agencies, or picture agencies perhaps I should say, they put a kill order on it because it was claimed that it was a really bad edit. And therefore they couldn't verify the veracity of the photo. And then we had the royal household, well, I'm not sure if they released it, but there was a short video that was put out. I think it was on the Sun News website, so tabloid newspaper here in the UK, and it claimed it was Kate and William walking from a local farm shop in Windsor. And then they showed stills of both of them, and you could see quite clearly that it wasn't them. So then latterly, more recently, just over a week ago now, I think actually, there was a video released by Kate herself, in which she said that she's been having treatment for cancer. She had an operation apparently, and they found some form of cancer growth. And that was always obviously big news on the mainstream news. And then it was picked apart online in the alternative media. And many, many people claim that even this video broadcast of Kate is not real. They think it was an AI deep fake. Anyway, I'm not going to get into my thoughts in terms of what I think's going on. What I do want to say, really, in relationship to the truth or trap, I hope it will be helpful, is I know from myself, way back when now, and around about 2005, when I made this sort of concerted effort to no longer watch much TV or take much notice of the mainstream news, when obviously what happens is once we stop taking the news at face value, then there's this constant pressure to deconstruct whatever event it might be. In this case, it's, you know, not, well, where's Wally? It's where's Kate? Where's Kate Middleton? And this sort of pressure to try and find out the truth, it can become very draining, because, as I was saying, when we don't follow the crowd and just in many ways do as we're told, accept what we're told, it does sort of, it can get, what's the word I'm trying to think of here? it's almost as if we feel like this sort of responsibility to deconstruct all these events and find out the truth. And another new story, of course, is this bridge that's collapsed in Baltimore in the United States. And there's all this speculation online. Oh, it might have been the Russians who remotely hijacked the controls as revenge for the West and America's undoubted continued involvement in the Ukraine. It looked like some people are saying it was deliberately driven at one of the supports. Why did the whole bridge collapse? And yada yada yada, you know, the kind of thing. Not much speculation that moves on from there. I mean, initially, I would just say, in terms of the Baltimore Bridge collapse, like other people I've spoken to who I'm not interested in so-called truth of memes or themes or conspiracy chat, they did think, well, it's a bit odd that the bridge collapsed like that. Someone I know, a friend of mine, said it looked like it was made of chopsticks or matchsticks. So again, you've got all these strange anomalies, as we saw during in the years and still to this point after 9/11. And I mean, what I've learned as someone who, you know, if you know anything about me, went hard and fast down many rabbit holes and almost lost my mind in a sort of hall of mirrors where you do become, just like a dog chasing its tail. Imagine, you can picture the old style sort of carnivals or fairs. Or circuses, that's the word I'm looking for. Circuses, where you'd have the classic hall of mirrors back in the 70s and 80s, and you'd have these sort of, we'd look in them and it would kind of distort our image. And I think that's where I landed up. I didn't know what was up, I didn't know what was down, I didn't know what was left, I didn't know what was right. But all the while, I did think I would be able to work it. You know, I'd come to some sort of conclusion. Some sort of sensible conclusion, whilst falling down or getting stuck, I should say, down many of these rabbit holes. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't think there's anything wrong with healthy skepticism, especially in this day and age, and especially it did serve us well during COVID, I think you'll agree. But if there is a compulsion to pick apart every major news story, then yeah, life does become a bit of a drag. And I just think, really, once we know and understand the overall agenda, and this feeds into what I was talking about in one of my previous episodes on my sister show, Discerning Consciousness podcast, about loosh energy and energy harvesting, we're now at a situation now whereby what's being produced by the mainstream media, the stories, you know, as I was talking about the bridge in Baltimore in the US, the story of Kate Middleton, where is she? Is that her? Is it not? Really, what it's about is spellbinding us. Part of that is all the gaslighting, as we saw during COVID. So they're not really worried what our opinions are. All that the system really wants, and this is where, you know, it gets kind of dark and occult, the dark predatory forces that are attempting to harvest our energy. What they really want is the battle for our attention and our focus. And that's why I do think it's important. Like I did, I looked at that bridge, I thought, oh my God, those poor souls that were on the bridge at the time who perished, those poor people. And of course, the massive inconvenience to the people that live in that area, that state, and that particular part of the US. Of course, I feel sorry for them. But beyond that, like with Kate Middleton, I don't know her, if she has got cancer and the stories are true, you know, it's really sad and I wish her the best. But it doesn't personally affect me, as does the news story in Baltimore doesn't personally affect me, as it doesn't personally affect many people. And I think that's one of the ways in which I learned to just pull away from the screen, pull away from the internet, stop picking, stop all the speculation, because then we are in the state of being spellbound, and our focus and attention is not where we want it to be. And ultimately, where we want I believe our focus and attention to be is advancing our own lives. I don't mean that in an egotistical, selfish way, but it's only by advancing in our own lives, deep in our consciousness, deep in our awareness, coming into balance more, coming into equilibrium more. It's only by doing that that we can really be of any use to our friends and families and the people, the people that we meet just in our day-to-day lives, in our interactions. And just want to briefly back to COVID is, as I've said many times and many other commentators and content creators have said, we knew all the gaslighting during COVID was deliberate to create an emotional response in those people taking an interest, trying to work it out. The whole point was, well, it is absurd. So back to Kate and those images put out, they were deliberately put out so that they didn't look like her at all. That's all part of the that's all part of the spellbinding. That's all part of the anger and frustration. Sort of, how can they? Do they think they're going to do with it? Are they doing a shoddy job? What's going on? Are they laughing at us behind behind closed doors? What the hell is going on? And likewise with the bridge in Baltimore, it does seem, there are a lot of anomalies I don't want to get into right now, but a lot of strange occurrences. And again, I think, is that deliberate? I mean, sometimes, mistakes are made, and if you think in terms of the royal household, maybe their PR team aren't as who deal with all their social media stuff, mate. Maybe they aren't as slick as one would imagine, and they've worked on images and put out things that that weren't necessarily deliberately done in a bad way, or edited, sorry, in a bad way. Maybe that was the best that they could do. I don't know. Maybe that is a slightly naive view, some might say. But anyway, overall, I don't want to go on too much about this because I've got many other interesting things to get onto in today's episode. I've got quite a lot to cover. But overall, what we're talking about here is just stories, just loads of stories. And for us, they're not real. One thinks, was it 2 or 3 years ago, and that plane leaving Kabul, when the last British and American forces left Afghanistan or were forced out, and you had some Afghan civilians, they were trying to get on, I think it was a US plane of some description, cargo plane, there we go, remember it now. And you sure that the images, things that just didn't add up, like people were right by the engines and they were still on their feet. So loads of anomalies, some shots where the windows didn't look like real windows, some shots where it looked like the cargo plane was actually an inflatable plane. So I just think it's worth reminding you guys listening, because I'm reminding myself, because I did get, excuse me, sorry, I did get pulled into a bit of the where's Wally, where's Kate saga. I have to admit, and then I just pulled myself back and, stop, Anthony, stop, and remember what you're actually trying to do here. Is that all of these stories, as I was just saying, it's not real. All that really matters is our internal reality. And when we get stuck in, endless speculation, because that's what it is. It's not what the mainstream media talk about, and they say, oh, it's dangerous conspiracy theories. To speculate doesn't mean you're being involved in conspiracy theories. It's ridiculous, as we know now. The word conspiracy theories or conspiracies is completely meaningless. So to investigate the truth of something doesn't make you a conspiracy theory. Obviously, that's a trope that's used by the mainstream media to discredit people who are trying to uncover the truth and actually, really delve deeply into what's going on in this world. But just lastly on this, I would say, alongside remembering that a lot of it's a louche fest, it's about getting our in grabbing our emotions, which can are then in and then those emotions are obviously our form of energy that can be harvested. It's also well worth remembering that, of course, in terms of the truth of the moment right now, that is the only truth that exists. All those stories out there, and when we speculate upon them, and it can be fun as long as we do it in a conscious way, in a forensic way, in a measured way, and we don't lose our mind to it. But that isn't reality. Only reality and truth that exists right now is right this very moment, and in the next moment, and then the next moment. And that's always, I think that's always worth remembering. Just very, very lastly on this point, of course, when it came to COVID, it was different. Because when you, if we remember back, you know, if you couldn't go into a shop because you didn't have a mask, or you couldn't go to a sports event because you didn't have the much-fated COVID-19 health app, or whatever it was called, I can't remember now, then that's something that comes right into our face, literally, pardon the pun, face nappy. Or when our basic freedoms are being impinged in such a way, then, well, of course, we have a duty, I would say, to investigate what's going on and to delve a little bit deeper. But with all of these other stories out there, they don't really personally affect us. So beyond a little bit of light relief, a little bit of fun, I think that's, you know, that's really that's as far as it goes for a lot of these news stories. Anyway, I'm going to move on now. I just want to pick up something I spoke about in the last episode of Into the Void. So that'll be number 32. Get my maths right there. I was sharing an observation, something that's been picked up here in the UK by the mainstream media and by the political establishment, the system, whatever you want to call it. And there's this concern that there's around about 10 million UK citizens, Brits, who have opted out. So basically that means they're not on a consistent payroll, they're not claiming any benefits, or they're sort of still working age, they're sort of below 67, which I think is the age now here in the UK you can claim a state pension. So you could be saying they're opting out economically, they're not playing the game, and they're falling between the cracks. I mean, I would put myself in that category, in that I do bits and pieces of work, but I'm not actually formally on the payroll of any employer as such. So I probably would fall within this 10 million category of people. Now, what I want to talk about to bring us back, refocusing us, is the actual flip side of that. So I'm going to refer now to what I see sort of like the energy observing family members, friends, who literally have no interest in anything that I talk about on here or on my sister's show or any of my views. They probably think I'm a bit kooky, think I'm a bit crazy. Those are just go along to get along. Good, kind-hearted, honest people. But, you know, they've got no interest at all in anything outside of mainstream life, which is fair enough. Their hobbies, their leisure pursuits, their careers, and all the rest of it. So what I'm observing really is, it's a sort of like, I would call it like an energy of enduring or clinging or holding on. You imagine sort of the image of someone holding on very fiercely on a rock or a cliff edge, really holding on. And sort of tied up with this is this general refusal to change. They really can't countenance change. And also part of this is there's a real boom at the moment for nostalgia. There's a lot of people going, oh, I wish we could just go back to the 1980s when life seemed to still make sense. So obviously this is still a sizable amount of people, even if they're, you know, have some sort of cynicism or criticism towards politicians, or like here in the UK, there's this whole thing now, we've got an election coming up at some point, it's popular to say, oh, I hate the Tories. And but even in that light, you know, there's no real clamour for the Labour Party. But that's sort of where most people understanding of events is these have all been caused by politicians, and there isn't much that we can do about it. But beyond that, there's no great understanding. So, of course, we know that this is quite a large amount of people still, the majority. It's all about safety in numbers, as we saw during COVID, of course, following the crowd. But I think, you know, much of you guys listening are probably aware that I, like I am, and I like the work of Charles Eisenstein. He's really excellent at the way in which he sort of describes where we're at. I can put it very simply for my own benefit, and where society and the world is moving towards, and he does that in a non-sort of conspiratorial way. He does it in a way that garners hope, and he also does it in a way that doesn't attribute blame to specific politicians or Illuminist groups. I'm not saying that there isn't culpability, of course there is, but he does it in a way that I think is helpful. So, you know, as I said at the beginning, I was tend to in his intros, we know that to Into the Void, that society's falling apart. We can see it all around us in the UK. It's becoming more and more obvious. The educational system is just absolutely substandard. That isn't to say that a lot of teachers and teaching professionals are substandard, far from it. A lot of them do very hard work, but they are working within the confines of a system, as we have known for many, many decades now, is not about elevating educational standards. It's just about brainwashing the children. Also, in terms of physical infrastructure, here in the UK recently, we've had lots of horror stories about how local water companies are admitting to pumping raw sewage into the river system. So in one way, oh my God, shock, horror. But the counter side is at least more and more people can see, you know, to some degree at least, the depth of the corruption that's going on. And just to pick up, as I was talking about, a lot of people who are stuck in this clinging energy, let's just do what we're told, let's just, you know, we can't foresee any change, they just continue to look to the politicians, the experts, mainstream materialist science, academia. They look towards all of these groups that they think that's where the solutions will come from. But I believe, I think we know that there are going to be no answers. And again, as Charles Eisenstein says, these are part of the old stories. I like that. It's a very nice way of putting it. But the old systems and institutions and ways of doing things, like I said, with the education system, which is in free fall in the UK. Also, just to add to that, in terms of the amount of damaged children, the violence in that teachers have to face, there's a real crisis going on. So all of these old stories, these are part of these old stories that we need to leave behind. And being angry with the so-called experts, policymakers, economists, financiers and politicians is largely responsible. Because as I've said, I can't remember what episode it is now, forgive me, I know it's a bit of a sort of controversial view to take. I can't remember what episode, sorry, on Discerning Conscious podcast it was, but I believe we're really now, kind of signature of this era that we're in is about recognising we're all partly responsible for the state of the world without exception. I think we all have to hold our hand up, even if it's just in our negative thoughts, even if it's in not owning our shadow and all these different, we can't, you know, this blaming, this finger pointing, this idea of retribution, I believe is going to solve nothing. And it will just prolong the agony of our current malaise, which is sweeping across much of the Western world, you know. But I think really it's incumbent upon all of us to realise we have little choice as part of this movement towards something more sane. Is initially, at least, we do have to look within to find solutions. Because even within those who are clinging on, back to my point about the large mass of people that are just clinging on, holding on, waiting for instructions, can't see the necessity for change, or look to those who've already brought us to the brink of total collapse to bring us the solutions, ironically enough, there is increasing rage and anger. And we can see that in terms of interpersonal relationships. And I think the anger and frustration within wider society is just a sort of a recognition is a failure to recognise, that we need to do things in a new way. And it's at the same time, we do know that there's a sense of de-evolving within society, again, through the education system, through a lot of the propaganda, through mainstream media, through modern films, through modern pop music, TikTok influences that are all directed towards children. There's far less responsibility, as we know, increased self-entitlement, which I believe are at the core or the heart of a woke political ideology. And really, until humility and forgiveness are aligned with personal strength of character and integrity, and until this is embraced by sufficient numbers of people, then I don't really think anything, as I've said before, is going to change in the system. I think the system as we've known it, and the movers and the shakers have really run out of viable options now, in that everything they do is so obviously self-serving and criminal. The lies and the deception are just accepted within the population at large, because there's nothing that we can see to do to be able to do to change things. We can't elect a new group of people, a new group of moral people to get us out of this situation. And they don't, the current political establishment, whatever you want to call it, power brokers, they don't even really bother with the pretense anymore, as they haven't even tried to create any new political parties or any new political movements as such. And I think that they will just, I think they are just clinging to this idea of AI technology being their golden ticket. So somehow they'll still be able to remain in control in spite of more and more coming to light of the corruption, the greed, and the evil, really, at the end of the day. And but still, people do complain all the time. Why don't the politicians do something to stop the chaos? Why don't they reverse the decline in this? So there is this still existing naive trust in authority. Again, as we saw during COVID, and when we witness it first time, it can be very maddening. It can be very frustrating, because there's nothing really they can do. They always were illegitimate powers in the first place, and now their authority is completely dissolving, like sand castles in the desert being blown asunder by the wind. And so it really is over to us at this time, I believe, to grasp the nettle. So anyway, that was just a little bit. I wanted to talk a little bit in terms of the current clinging energies that you're probably witnessing all around you at this time. So I want to move on now and offer some hope in the face of what appears to be a desperate situation in the Middle East, with regards to Gaza and Israel and many of the countries bordering that region as well. I just want to talk about that particular part of the world in the Middle East from a sort of hyper zoomed out perspective, if you allow me to do that, and delve into some aspects of what's called the Great Awakening, as we know, in this specific time during this stage in the Kali Yuga, when we are going through an apocalypse or a great revealing. That's the true definition of the word apocalypse, or some point to the Bible, and they might equate it to being the chapters on Revelations. And furthermore, it could also be said this is we're at the point now how the darkness is revealed, or we could also say perhaps it's the ultimate way in which evil destroys itself over time. So I've just grouped all those things together as a little segue in terms of how might this process unfold, because when one looks at the situation in the Middle East with regards to Gaza, Israel, whatever one's point of view is on whatever's unfolding there, it is that it's a hopeless situation. So what I'm trying to get across here is that how things can change for the better, even though on the surface it seems like that is the utterance, that is a total utterance of a madman or a mad person, perhaps I should say. Because typically, when one looks within at our blind spots, and then there's sort of this breakdown that you probably heard in terms of there are things we know, things that we don't know, and then there are things that we don't know that we don't know. So it sort of breaks down in three or four different ways. So this often means that belief systems that we hold or commonly held ideas that are simply untrue, or many of us hold comforting illusions and an extremely naive worldview. Now, one such example of such a person could be someone, let's say, for example, who works for, let's say, a United Nations or UN relief agency. And they currently working in Gaza, helping to provide aid to the people of Gaza. And typically, these would be quite well-educated people in the Western world, probably have degrees in international relations, politics, philosophy, that kind of thing, maybe even master's degree and so on and so forth. And typically, these types of people, when you hear them interviewed on the news, it's quite clear from the ideas that they espouse. They fervently believe in the myth of Western liberal democracy and the primacy of democracy in its ability to protect the rights of minorities. And it's also claimed that human rights are enshrined in law. And such an individual working for UN agency, UN relief aid, would never have any real reason to question this belief, this belief that they have, that's widely held by such people. And then obviously things kicked off last October in Israel. And since then, we've had many thousands killed in Gaza. Many have been forced to migrate from their homes, and many homes have been destroyed as a consequence of Israel's actions. Now, in this situation, we've seen how impotent the UN are. The UN has been powerless to act. Many aid convoys continue to be held up at the border, and it's sort of like an ongoing story every day. And now we've seen some pictures of aid being airlifted into Gaza, but it's nowhere near the amount needed. And also, a side issue, of course, is Western governments continue to be able to hold Israel to account due to the power and influence of Zionism in Western governments. And that's all well documented, of course, Jewish people and non-Jewish people as well, as we saw during the W. Bush regime, many of which were non-Jews, but they still had an allegiance to Zionism and were quite happy to admit that publicly as well. So that isn't a conspiracy theory as such. So we could, let's just think again of our aid worker, UN relief aid worker. Because of this situation that I'm talking about, some of these truths, they begin to call into question what they previously had believed about the West and liberal democracy. They see with their own eyes, in terms of witnessing the unnecessary suffering of the people in Gaza. And perhaps for the first time, they come to the shocking, horrific thought that the United Nations is a totally ineffective and hamstrung organisation. Now, this obviously leads to their own kind of epiphany, maybe even a dark night of the soul. And this could also lead to an increasing anger and frustration at the situation. And they may even begin to see the reality of international relations, the reality of how the world really works, and the moral cowardice of many Western governments and actually relief agencies. A lot of what they do is just a charade or a cover, if you will, much like, as we know, McDonald's do donate a very small paltry amount of their profits to children's hospitals. They've done it in the Southampton General Hospital, not far from me. There's a little logo. You go up to the eye unit where I regularly go for a condition I've got, and it's got a little plaque there that about donations that was made to a children's ward from McDonald's, apparently. Well, that's because, of course, 99% of what they do is intrinsically evil, but then they think by doing 1% good that will atone for the 99%. And that's how I believe the actual truth of a lot of these relief agencies, in that as the actual positive effect of the work that they do is absolutely minuscule. So back to this individual, hardworking individual, no doubt, their life is turned upside down, and they begin to perhaps see reality very disturbingly for the first time. Their world is literally, as I was saying, turned upside down. because of the actions of Israel in Gaza. And what we have here is what I describe as the law of unintended consequences. And these extrapolated more widely really is, I believe, what is sort of a big motivating factor for, there is definitely, although it might not appear to us on our, in our day-to-day lives, there is a growing awakening amongst the people. And I just wanted to use this as an example of sometimes I think we can, I hold my hand out here if you could see it, how pessimistic we get at times, and to not understand that when a state actor like Israel conducts a so-called kind of military campaign, which really is just brutalizing a whole group of people, mass slaughter and murder, as we know, it can eventually lead to some form of good in that it causes awakening, as I'm using the example of this UN relief aid worker. And I think we're going to see that more and more as the systems in its attempt to spellbind us back to what I was talking about earlier are going to create more and more and more crazy events. And I wouldn't even be surprised if that led to a fake alien invasion or a Project Bluebeam type scenario where we see a God or a Jesus-like character or Muhammad or whatever, some sort of saviour figure beamed up in the sky, because the darkness is really, 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 really struggling now. And you can see more through the mainstream media, more and more of its attempt to just grab our attention with the absurdity of everything and to just take us off centre, really. I think, you know, as I was saying before, we do need to try and keep our eye on the ball at all times. It's really important. So lastly, in today's episode, what I would like to talk about is, again, I think it's quite critical on the path of awakening, which is really one of my main themes on my Into the Void and my sister show, Discerning Consciousness podcast. And when we begin to wake up, as I did, as I've said quite a lot recently, forgive me, in the run-up to the Gulf War Operation Iraqi Freedom, ha ha ha, which started in March 2023, of course, is still, when people begin to wake up, they tend to look towards leftist ideologies and therefore socialism. And then back in the 1990s, that's very much, I did believe in socialism. I was a supporter of the Labour Party. I had periods of time where I was a member of the Socialist Workers' Party. I know, shock, horror. But we do all go through these kind of different periods of our lives. I think we look back and think, my God, was that really me? But yeah, I did for periods of time being part of kind of leftist, left-wing organisations. And I used to buy all the sort of left-wing political literature like Tribune and New Statesman, and I'd look at newspaper editorials, and I was very much into political analyst shows and things like Question Time here in the UK and all the rest of it, you know, sort of like a bit obsessed with politics I was, because, you know, when we do begin to sort of at least wake up on a very rudimentary level, to the sort of economic, social and political injustices, first thing that many people look to is towards socialism, left-wing ideologies. Now, I just want to explain, and when I do this, I'm not doing this from the perspective of, you know, saying I agree with right-wing sort of Reaganite economics where there should be minimal, you know, very, very little welfare state. I'm not arguing for that, or whereby It's sort of like going back to the 1980s here in the UK under Thatcher, and we had a famous quote by one of her ministers at the time, Norman Tebbit, and he said to the unemployed, "Get on your bike," as if to say, all the people unemployed at the time were just lazy hicks who needed a kick up the bum. I'm not saying that unemployed people are lazy or poor people are lazy, but I just want to explain why I do think that socialism is such a dangerous, divisive, and destructive ideology. And I did begin to realize in the mid 2000s, around about 2005, I think it was at the same time Tony Blair, New Labour, had been in power for about 8 years, and the reality of New Labour, which was really just a reworked version of conservatism and Tory party policies. I just realized that really socialism, I sort of nailed my colours to a fiction, and more and more when I looked into the truth, I just realized I was being manipulated, and I sort of I didn't realize how much I was being manipulated by believing in socialism and left-wing ideas. But of course, let's just start from the premise of socialism and leftist ideologies. They propose that society is unfair, is unequal, because of the way in which society is structured. And typically, that would mean issues to do with the class system. So we have unequal distribution of wealth, racial or ethnic minorities face inequalities as well. And now, of course, in the woke era, that includes people who are part of the LGBT community as well. And it is said that minority groups are denied access to adequate resources because of the way in which society discriminates against such groups. But how do we really truly reach the Jerusalem or the Holy Grail of equality? Of course, the leftists claim through government intervention, laws, programs, social policy in order to redress the balance, in order to make society more fair and equal. And it is said that those denied access to certain resources and a certain level of or a certain lifestyle can have the same opportunities as those who are not denied them, those who it is said are not part of minority groups, so who claimed do not face any obstacles to being a success in life, if I could put it like that. So why do I believe that it's like a dangerous lie or deception? Is because in order to create a compliant population, largely of victims, again, as we saw during COVID, it's required for people to look to the government or the state as their saviours in the form of state or government funded policies and programmes in order to lift them out of poverty. But this in turn denies the primacy or centrality of the individual and their higher power or their status or their higher status, or one could say their godliness or their higher powers. And as a result, socialism then, within socialism, the state becomes the god, if you like, because it is the primary and main principal source of power, because it shapes, it is said to shape the life and destiny, especially at those at the lower end of the economic and socio-economic scales. So it is said that the state should be active to help those who are in need and unable to help themselves. And as I said at the beginning of this little section, I have no problem for that, obviously, with people who can't help themselves. And there are many millions of people, for good or ill, in the UK now, who literally are so dependent on welfare payments or welfare programs or the welfare state, in it, the welfare state. That's just a fact now, and there's kind of like no going back. So if the rug was pulled from them and they were no longer got any financial support, it would be very, very, very difficult. But there are those who continue who are typically seen on the right of politics, who argue that many people choose not to help themselves in this country, and that part of this issue is that the welfare benefits system, it is, as I've tried to navigate it myself in the past, ridiculously bureaucratic, deliberately complicated, and deliberately, I might add, locks people into dependency. And I, what I would agree with is there's no incentive to try and escape this dependency. And the rules, the benefit rules, directly disincentivize self-improvement, because when people come off benefits, it's extremely hard and bureaucratic to then reapply and get back some form of payment. And it's very difficult, it can be difficult to claim benefits whilst working. So there's all these complications, as I would argue, because that's quite deliberate, because here in the UK, at least, I can't speak for the rest of the world, but we have a particularly insidious form of government, increasingly insidious, that seems to feed itself on dependency and feed itself on creating more and more of a bureaucratic system. And this is also happening by the fact getting harder and harder for working people to pay their rent, as we know, to pay their mortgage and just to live. I believe, again, that's probably quite deliberate. And a lot of socialists today, I believe, they don't realise in many ways in which we're already, here in the UK at least, living this sort of socialist dream, or what I would argue is, and many others of course, is a socialist nightmare. So it's quite bizarre that they're dreaming and salivating at the prospect of some sort of socialist utopian UK in the future. Well, in many ways we're already there. So I think, again, that's really quite deeply ironic. And for me, that was a big wake-up call back in the day. That's more than 20 years ago now, recognizing the true meaning and purpose of socialism and left-wing ideology. It's a big one, because it's like one of those things where it's like that carrot that's dangled in front of us, a bit like all those who are consumed by what I argue is the fake green agenda and this sort of almost religious-like belief that when we reach carbon neutral, carbon zero, sorry, perhaps I could say that humanity will, you know, rise and reach this exalted status. So it's almost like that this carrot that is in the future in terms of socialism, it's the carrot that one day, you know, when we have a pure form of socialism, then we can reach some sort of fairness and equality within society. And more broadly, I think socialism is just, or political ideologies as a whole, and I did study politics at university to undergraduate level as a mature student, and political philosophy and things like that. It was quite difficult for me, of course, to give up all of that and realise that a lot of it is just absolute nonsense, really. It was a hard one to let go of, but I'm glad I did, because it meant, you know, I've been able to sort of grow up. It is one of those things where you leave the vestiges of youth, and some might say childhood, behind, and you can actually begin to view and see the world as an adult when you begin to take responsibility for yourself. Anyway, I think I'll leave things there for now, and I just want to say thank you so much for tuning in. Apologies, it's been quite a while since I've been doing my Into the Void audio diary. So anyway, I hope, as always, there's some things that you can relate to in terms of what you're going through at the moment. So thank you all once again, and I'll speak to you all very soon. Bye bye for now.